Welcome to the AquariumMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 130, recorded September 12th, 2012. Hey everybody, I bet you can guess that I am alone again this evening. It was our son's birthday the other day, so instead of doing the podcast, we celebrated his birthday that day, and so I'm recording on the day when Kelly's at her dance practice. So there you go. That's why I am alone tonight. Today we have some guests, though, contributors, I should say, that will help liven things up. Tony from New York, Brett in Melbourne, Australia, and Mick in Carnforth, UK. Before we talk about that, though, just a little update about the bettas. They're 7 weeks, 2 days old now. They're all betta-shaped. You know, they all look like small female bettas, basically, in their fin shape and body shape and so on. There's more color in the finnage in quite a few of them. It looks like a lot of them are going to be either butterfly or Cambodia. Some of them it's a little hard to tell at this state. We will need to finish jarring them soon. We haven't yet because once we removed the largest, most aggressive fish, the other ones weren't nearly as aggressive, so we haven't needed to do that yet, but we will need very soon. And I wanted to mention sort of an adventure I have with had with betta food. One of my favorites is Addison's Betta Food, which is now, I guess, distributed by Ocean Nutrition, which I guess wasn't always the case, but I could be getting something messed up. But they are the distributors now for Addison's Betta Food. And I bought a large container of it, thinking, well, I have, you know, 50-something odd bettas or more than that. I'm going to buy a larger container rather than the really small ones that I usually get. And it turns out I did, and the pellets were larger. They were like, on average, maybe twice the size of the pellets I used to get, which wasn't so good for several reasons for me, because in doing training with bettas, smaller particles are better because you can give more reinforcements or more treats, basically, in a training session. You know, if you have pellets that are twice the size of what I used to use, then you can only give them 3 or 4 pellets and they're full. So that was a bit of a problem. So I contacted Ocean Nutrition, and they were very, very helpful throughout the entire situation, asking me questions. They had me send what I had back, and we eventually determined that in Thailand, where the food is made, they changed the specs. And so some time ago, and so you can still get lots. If you're buying an older lot, you can still get lots of it that have the smaller pellet size, which is what I had been doing, but that at some point they increased the pellet size. But the long and short of it is, Ocean Nutrition was very helpful, very courteous all the way through, and sent me, for my trouble, one container of betta food that was identical to the one that I had used, which I can still use, of course, as well as a large container of Addison's Betta Pro, which I'd never tried, but I'm enthusiastic to try, and some of their Addison's Betta Water Conditioner, too. So I'm both grateful to them for their help and attention and excited to try things out. So I would also like to say that I have so much of the Addison's Betta Pro that if there's anybody who's really interested in trying it out there and I don't get a huge number of requests, I might be able to work something out if you want to pay for the postage. I can send you some of that because, hey, and you're supposed to use it in 6 months, and I have enough that I will not finish in 6 months with the number of bettas that I have. You know, somewhere between 50 and 60 or so, I won't finish it. So if you're interested in it, drop us a line, and we'll see what we can do, as long as you're willing to shell out a little bit of postage. All right. Well, let's first look at the message from Tony in New York. He says, "Hello, Russ and Kelly. I recently took responsibility for some lovely killifish. 4 Fundulopanchax gardneri nigerianus, Misagi strain, for my 6.6 gallon office aquarium, and 10 Fundulopanchax marmoratus, GS88/1 strain, for my 20 gallon at home. I must admit that I am getting a little nostalgic for my old hobby, fishless cycling, but I am also confident that I will enjoy fish keeping just as much, maybe more." Well, I echo that sentiment. Fishless cycling can be absorbing, but yeah, I think you're on the right track there. "Anyway, I spoke with a killifish pro," he continues, who told me how to hatch brine shrimp eggs. His method involved an old club soda bottle, which was turned upside down and had an airline tube poked through the cap and held in place with aquarium sealant. That tube could be used to aerate the eggs or to drain them. But here's the clever part. When the shrimp hatched, he would cover the uppermost part of the bottle with something dark, like black paper or a vinyl strip, and eventually all the brine shrimp would move toward the bottle cap where the light was. The unhatched eggs and shells would float to the top, making it really easy to harvest just the brine shrimp. He would pour them into a fine fishnet, rinse them, and serve. I asked him about decapsulation, and he said he never bothered. Presumably enough eggs would hatch anyway, even without the extra step. Just thought I'd pass this along. P.S. Axelrod rocks. And if you don't know who Axelrod is, I know many of you do, but those of you who may have entered the hobby more recently, Dr. Herbert Axelrod, was a fish collector and an author, and he has several fish with names that derive from his name. The Cardinal Tetra, for example, named after him. So there you go. And thank you, Tony, for that tip on hatching brine shrimp. I had forgotten that I had used a method similar to that with the tubing that goes through the lid at the bottom of the hatchery, and how effective that was at keeping, you know, errant shells and unhatched shrimp out of it. I remember using that one in Hawaii. It was a pretty nice arrangement. So I don't know why I've used the other method lately, because it seems to me, and this, you know, this may be wrong, but from what I can recall, it was a more effective way of keeping things out that I didn't want. And so maybe I need to do that again. And adding, you know, a little, some sort of sleeve over the jar sounds even better. Because the fact that baby brine shrimp are light sensitive and are attracted to light is nice to help you collect them. Like when I feed our baby bettas, I set them next to the lamp that I used to hatch the brine shrimp with. And then in the jar, and they all sort of migrate over to that side, and I suck them up with an eyedropper to do that. So I don't know why I didn't think of this method again, but I'm glad you brought it up. I'm going to give it a try, and for those of you who haven't tried it at all yet, I do recommend you try it. It's fun. So thank you, Tony. All right, our next one is from Brett in Melbourne, Australia. This is the same Brett from last week. We just didn't know where he was from, but he has given us the information. He's from Melbourne, Australia, so it's nice to hear from an Aussie again. He says, thanks for answering my questions about the tubing sizes. Here's another if you've not covered it before. And he says, I'm coming back to the hobby after an absence of 20 plus years. In my teens, I had a freshwater tropical tank for many years, one with the old box filters containing cotton and carbon. Then later, I had a more challenging and not as successful marine tank. This time I'm again trying something new, a cichlid tank. It's been fun finding out about all the exciting new technologies, such as canister filters and external heaters, and also interesting to have the resources of the internet at my fingertips in place of what I had before, some old library books. I'm with you there. One question that recently entered my now more mature head is, how do you deal with maintaining aquariums whilst away on vacation? Feeding, of course, is not such an issue. You can have a friend come by and drop in some flakes. But what about water changes? That seems a lot to ask a friend to do. Is there any technology that can help with this? Would you have any advice for vacationing aquarists? Brett, Melbourne, Australia. Well, Brett, that is a great question. And I would say first, feeding can actually be quite an issue, because unless you have a fish-savvy friend, sometimes getting your neighbors to feed the fish can be more dangerous than letting them go without. And I actually would suggest, if you're going to be gone any less than 2 weeks and you don't have really sensitive fish or fry or things like that that will need food, don't even feed them. I've had a couple of vacations in situations where I wasn't able to feed them for 2 weeks or so, and the fish were fine, came back to all healthy fish, no deaths. But then on other situations, I have had people come in and feed them, and despite careful directions, we did lose a goldfish that way, because he apparently got grossly overfed while we were gone. And yeah, so that can be a problem. One often recommended technique with that, beyond automatic feeders, which of course is a possibility, is to put the food into small containers or parcels of some kind. You know, put them in
some plastic wrap or wax paper and tape them into little parcels and say, this is for Monday, this is for Tuesday, and so on, and set them next to each aquarium, and then they'll just use that quantity. Of course, a little training beforehand never hurts, and reminding them that fishes' stomachs are about the size of their eye, and they really don't need to eat very much, and they don't expend very much energy compared to a warm-blooded mammal that has to hold itself up all day. And, you know, sometimes that logic does appeal to them, and they begin to understand. Other times it doesn't. So those are some things that probably need to consider when you're on vacation. I have had times where fry need to be fed, or, you know, particularly sensitive fish. And usually I end up training, you know, one of our neighbors or something like that, one of my children's friends that is interested in doing that, and we'll, you know, pay them a little bit and they'll come in and feed them. But generally I make them a training video, actually. That's what I've been doing, because we have so many different tanks and we need them to water the carnivorous plants and, you know, different things like that. So I'll make them a training video where I go around and feed them and explain everything that needs to be done, and then I'll give that to them on a DVD that I'll burn, and then if they have any questions, they can look at that. I also give them, of course, the phone number where I can be reached, and that has been really helpful to do that technique. I would say you could possibly do that with water changes, but honestly, I haven't generally had them do water changes. What I do is I do a nice water change before I leave and plan on doing a nice one before I come back. I haven't been on vacation long enough to really think it's much of a problem. It's not ideal, obviously, but if you're gone for 2 weeks and you don't do a water change and your tank is otherwise stable and healthy and you've been keeping up with water changes, I don't think it's usually a difficulty. If you have a situation where your tank might be might evaporate, you might lose too much water, you have an open top tank or something like that, that's something to consider as well. You might need to make some sort of provision to keep the tank from evaporating or have someone top it off. But other than that, I really don't usually bother to make provision for water changes during a vacation. However, you could look into automatic water changing. I mean, there are people who plumb that into their house. I was talking to Ken Jones, the Prince of Ponds, a while ago about that. He has an aquarium in his house, and he has it hooked up to an RO system. So the reverse osmosis water automatically goes into the aquarium, and then he has another something installed. I can't remember exactly I can't recall, but he had it installed in such a way so that the tank was constantly being drained. I don't remember if the tank was drilled or it had an overflow. No, I think he built an overflow for it, like a PVC overflow, and it drained outside. I mean, he had the tubing go outside and drain out on the ground, and so the tank is constantly getting a very slow water change, and he has it maintained at, you know, a specific level and everything all the time, so he doesn't need to worry about water changes. And because it's RO water going into the tank, he does have fish like discus and cardinal tetras in there and so on, so he's not too worried about, you know, some of the fish that wouldn't do well with such water with a small amount of total dissolved solids in it. But he does have a mineral block in there that dissolves slowly to add some minerals to the water, and the fish are doing great. So that's one solution, but it's a little bit more involved than, you know, just leaving the tank for an extra week. So hopefully that helps. A couple of ideas, anyway, that you might be able to use if you're on vacation. Although, once again, to recap, if you have fry or sensitive fish that need to eat frequently, or you're going to be gone longer than 2 weeks, you probably do need to train someone. Maybe that making a video for them could be useful. All right, next we've got Mick in Carnforth, UK. He says, "The Creepy Crawly Cory Chronicles continue. Yes, a shameless attempt for this week's alliteration prize. And Mick, I am pleased to report that you have won, hands down. They seem to be on the winning side of their parasite problem. I have been treating with a brand called Waterlife Sterizen, combined with 80% water changes every second day. I will have to make sure that I keep the tank free of crustacea, as I wouldn't want any residue to kill off the wee beasties. I will probably leave it a good 12 months to allow any leftovers, which might have penetrated the silicone, before I try any aquatic inverts in there. I will also change the substrate and remove any bogwood or general decor, and probably use a filter from another tank to completely minimize any effects.
On the rare occasion, I use a medication, and after the course is complete, I run activated carbon in the filter for around a week, which is changed out every day to try and absorb any traces. I'm really glad you brought this up, Mick. I think a lot of aquarists don't realize that inverts, like ornamental shrimp, for example, can be much more sensitive to medications than some of the fish. And there are certain fish that are more sensitive than others, particularly the so-called scaleless fish can be more sensitive to medications. And most inverts are sensitive to a lot of medications, including snails, shrimp, and so on. So particularly copper-based medications, but also others. So I'm really glad you brought that up so that other aquarists would be aware of that, some of them who maybe hadn't known that. And he gives the breakdown for steridzin, which is malachite green, 0.08%, piperazine citrate, 0.34%, acriflavine hydrochlorate, 0.055%, and formaldehyde, 0.2%. So if you're wondering about that, or if maybe you can't get Waterlife steridzin where you are, but if you can find a medication with similar breakdown chemically, you may be able to use it if you have a similar problem with your quarries. Today, I also added 6 more blue-legged hermit crabs, Mick continues, to my mini marine setup. This leads me to wonder if the term not-so-hermit crabs might be better suit these critters. Very true. In fact, the land hermit crabs that are so popular, it's also a misnomer for them. They're very social and like to live in groups. So I wonder why they call it hermit crabs, because it seems, I mean, I've seen them be antisocial. Some of our marine hermit crabs would fight over shells and things like that, but they tend to, you know, be in groups. So I like your term, not-so-hermit crabs. He continues, some of my live rock is getting a little fuzzy in parts, so I hope the additional crabby cleanup crew relieves me of the need to apply the toothbrush technique quite so often. Well, let's hope so. They're fun, very interesting creatures. Anyway, I must admit I have a fondness for hermit crabs, both marine and terrestrial. And now, drum roll please. Shrimp news. Mick says, when I went to my local shop for the hermits, I got talking to the owner about my exploits with the world of cherry shrimp, both more interesting and educational than Warcraft. He went round the back and brought me out 10 blue pearl shrimp, and I was asked if I was interested. Needless to say, they are now going through my acclimation process in the fish room. He said they often have shrimp in, but because of their size, they don't often put them in the main sales displays, so to just ask whenever I'm in. I have been using the shop off and on for about 8 years and didn't know they had a VIP section. He also said they could order species I was interested in and have them for the next week. I almost did the secret shrimp dance out of the shop. No, this will never appear on YouTube. Which is rather too bad, because when I read this for the first time, I couldn't help have a smile on my face and just kind of imagine Mick doing the secret shrimp dance. So I kind of wish you'd put it up on your page there, on the Shrimp Shed page on YouTube. And he finishes saying, keep up the beta updates. It's great to follow your progress. Best wishes, Mick in Cunforth, UK. Well, thanks, Mick. And isn't it nice to have a pet store that will, you know, individualize their treatment of you? It's nice. We've been fortunate enough to have a store like that near us that now they know to come, who to come if they want Daphnia and so on. And we've traded in quite a few fish and other creatures for credit. And it's just nice to have when they have that rapport that you build up, and they're the ones they'll show you, oh, look what we got. Hey, you want to see this? I love that. So, well, the show is a bit shorter this week, which is partly because Kelly's not around to make interesting, amusing, tangential comments, which I miss. But that's okay. She'll be back next week, and she'll have all sorts of lovely things to contribute and make the show more fun and more rounded out. So, in the meantime, may the fish be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.